The Real World Entrepreneurship Podcast with Bhairav Patel and Alan Clark.
Welcome to the Real World Entrepreneurship Podcast, where we tackle the practical challenges that startup founders and small business owners face and give our own unvarnished opinions. My name is Bhairav Patel. I'm the Managing Director at Atom Ventures and Atom CTO, where we partner with small businesses and startup founders to help them define and build their tech vision.
And I'm Alan Clark. I'm the founder of the Business Growth Partnership, and we work with high-potential businesses to help them unblock the blockages that are preventing them from reaching their full potential.
Hello, lovely listeners. It's Bhairav and Alan here, and this week we're going to be talking about business finance, right? So we're talking about how do you finance your business? A number of different things, really. Why do you need funding? How do you find funding? What do you need to know before you actually go and get funding? And then once you've got the funding, how do you monitor that? But before we get into all of that, Alan, what have you been doing this week?
Well, this week, and we're recording this just at the time that lockdown restrictions are beginning to ease, I've been doing a lot of stuff that is really around businesses that are now looking for the future and how they're going to come out of lockdown. So one of the things I do is webinars for Business Gateway in the UK, in Scotland specifically. So this week I delivered one on restructuring your business for the new future, or the near future, and another one on marketing. But on a personal basis, probably the most enjoyable thing is a business I've been working with for the last couple of years that has got a great growth ambition to quadruple in size up to £40 million is now taking me on. I've committed to a long-term relationship, so I can't tell you. I'm super excited about getting involved in that.
Sounds very interesting. That sounds like a great marriage. So are you going to be helping them with scaling and growth? And
really, it's kind of, it particularly picks up on my past in brand building and marketing. But there's also a broader role, which has just always been a bit of an agent provocateur, I think, inside it. Being the person that goes in and asks the questions that maybe the existing management team hasn't been asking itself. That's really what I've been doing over the last couple of years with them, but super stoked to be doing it. I'm sure, I absolutely will aim to bring them on to a future podcast and they can tell their own story, because it really is a brilliant entrepreneurship story.
Okay, cool. I think we should also do a podcast on the restructuring piece that you were talking about, because that intrigues me, and I have a lot of questions on that, but I don't want to take away from this podcast.
Well, that sounds good, because I've only got an hour and a half webinar that I do on that, so I have to squeeze that into 30 minutes.
Yeah, cool. Well, I mean, my week has been an interesting one, actually. I've been working on a decentralized finance project on the blockchain. So I don't know if the listeners that. So exactly, that's
what
it.
What does that mean?
So for the lovely listeners out there who have heard of blockchain, one of the big things that are going on right now, you may have heard of this, called NFTs, non-fungible tokens. And that is all part of what is called the decentralized finance craze, bubble, whatever you want to call it right now, on the blockchain. So essentially what it means is that there's lots and lots of money on the blockchain. As you know, Bitcoin's increased massively in price, same as with Ethereum, and lots of people have made lots of money. So there's a lot of money floating around in the crypto sphere. And one of the ways that, and people can't necessarily take this money out into the real world, right? So there has been over the last 2 years, I would guess, 2-3 years probably, a move into what's called decentralized finance. So for ways people can use the crypto money that they've got to finance themselves, finance loans, earn yield on the tokens that they've got, and do this in essentially a decentralized way, right? Without banks, without having any brokers or aggregators in the middle. And so we're looking at putting together something for that, based on some of the knowledge that we've got from the past of financing for businesses and small businesses. So it's very kind of much in line with the podcast. We won't go into that into too much detail, but it's very interesting, very complicated. And I think it's one of these things where early stage, what they've done is they've made it very, they've used a lot of jargon to make everything very obscure.
Yeah.
And it's always the people that will win out on the early stage are the ones who understand the nuances.
That would be a fantastically useful thing for a lot of people, to demystify blockchains and demystify cryptocurrencies. I spent an hour and a half on a webinar that was intended to demystify cryptocurrencies, and all it did was confuse me even more.
Yeah, I think a lot of people just get mixed up with the fact that all the encryption, the algorithms and things like that, that are there. But essentially, it is money moved around.
Well, that's the thing that got me about this one. Actually, and it was with Bitcoin, the fact that there are Bitcoins out there, they're not yet discovered or released yet, but they exist, and they're going to be hugely valuable, but they don't exist, so where did the value come from? Anyway, that's a whole other subject matter.
It is, and that's something that there are many podcasts and many podcasts about. So
absolutely.
But let's get on to the...
So we're going to talk today about funding that doesn't involve inventing money that doesn't actually exist.
That's very true. Well, actually, all money is invented, as they say, right? So let's start from the very beginning, right? So why does a business need funding? So when in your past endeavors and your current companies that you're working with, Alan, why are businesses seeking funding?
Usually because they want to grow and develop, and they recognize that they are likely to organically create the money that they need. And that's a positive approach, or the not so positive approach is companies who are in a bit of duress and realize there's a gap that they have to bridge before they can get back onto steady land where the business can actually afford to fund itself.
Yeah, so I mean, from my world, most of the funding I come across is obviously equity funding in the startup space and then growth funding. But then working at Aztec, where we did supply chain trade finance, all of that was working capital finance for businesses, but wasn't necessarily just to bridge a gap. I mean, a lot of times it was because people forgot that they had VAT bills to pay and payroll and things like that. But then there were a number of companies that used to come to us for growth funding because they found it very difficult as a small business to get a decent amount of funding from traditional banks.
And I think that's what we should focus on today, is that positive side of it, which is when businesses are looking to grow and expand and they're looking to bring in, and as you say, it really all boils down to working capital, having money to spend on things that will allow the business to carry on and do what it's done better and bigger.
So in your experience, have you seen a lot of people that have financed their businesses through their own personal savings, houses, cars? Has that been very common?
That's great. Usually, when I see people doing that, they are early stage entrepreneurs doing it for the first time. And the more successful or serial entrepreneurs are not funding it themselves, or they're only putting in a very small amount of the funding. Because frankly, they appreciate that it is risky to fund a business out of their own funds. Because if it goes belly up, it's your money you've just lost.
Exactly. So why do you think people do it? I've seen so many people mortgage houses. Actually, there's one guy I know who, and thankfully his company's done very well, but he sold his house, he and his wife moved in with his parents, and they used the entire house proceeds to fund his business. Now, it's going well from what I understand, but it's that in itself is a huge risk.
Well, that's all about really putting your skin in the game. And usually when that happens is because, well, I would suggest that before you do that, one should have explored the other options to raise the money. And actually, if you've looked at all the other options and there is a very good reason why you don't want to follow them, and that means they were made available to you and you chose to say no, rather than you investigated and nobody would back your business. If it's the former, well, it's your risk. And you will get all the return. But usually funding, usually always, external funding comes at a price. And that can be a very significant price if you're on Dragon's Den and you're giving away most of your business for a relatively small amount of money. Or it can be much less if you're able to agree a deal on debt that goes into the business. And all you're going to do is pay a percentage of interest. But I think we're going to talk about there's lots and lots and lots of ways of raising that money And every one of them is good at pros and cons.
Just a little side, kind of side story here. I think when you look at people and their risk profile and how much risk they take at the initially when they're starting their business, right? Every person I know who's got a lot of wealth never uses any of their own money to fund anything that they do. And, I can, when we were at Aztec, there were some billionaires behind that. And, you know, just hearing anecdotally some of the things that they invested in, they were not using any of their money to buy any assets at all. And they were getting lent money at very, very low rates because they were asset rich. And so that's, I find, you know, that's the disparity that we have obviously in the world today, which is crazy really when you think about
it. Well, that's not a million miles away from my story when we started up Team Rock, where we were able to lever the money based on our chairman's position and raise the money on that. And sure, our chairman, John, had to put in a very meaningful amount of money. But in return, we got 30 times as much invested into the business. And the issue we had there was the rest of the founders. Frankly, sure, we can raise some money between us. But when you're aiming to raise 15 million, it wasn't a drop in the ocean compared to the money that we actually raised. So that was very much an example of doing something by using other people's money. And one might say that was very expensive for us, but we had a big ambition, so we had to give away a lot to get the money. But that was a compromise that was worth doing, because without the money, we'd never have been able to do it.
So obviously you were raising money to finance the start of the business, and actually you were buying another business with that.
Yeah.
That cash.
Well, 2/3 of that money was an asset purchase. So that gave our investors some reassurance that we'd actually bought something of value with their money.
But what, okay. So that's great. So that leads on to one of the next points, which is what does it make sense to finance? What does it actually make sense to raise money for? Now I've seen people raise money for some crazy stuff like apartments and cars and corporate and things that you don't really need. So in all the businesses you work for, right, have you seen some nonsense financing going on?
Oh, well, the reality is not really, because it's bloody hard to get through an investment committee by the time they interrogate your business plan to raise money for bells and whistles. That doesn't mean that after they've raised the money, some people don't buy stupid things. But it was not what they raised the money to do, because frankly, they wouldn't have got it. But because what funders are looking for is giving you capital to help you grow the business, or give you funding to help you grow the business. So they'll happily invest in things like product development and research and development, and market testing, and marketing, and building the team, and product and production capabilities, and protecting IP. All things that are levers for growth. But if your business plan is full of a fancy office, or bringing on loads of staff that won't actually contribute to developing the business, or things that you don't really need, till a year or a year and a half down the line, you're going to find it really, really, really hard to raise that money from any kind of external resource.
I guess a lot of companies or people listening to the podcast might be in a little bit of a trap though, right? So they may be in a situation where they have money already. They know that they need to grow and they're looking to get the financing, but they're not quite sure whether that money that they've got will help them grow enough to actually get that. The returns that they need. So it's a little bit of a gamble, right? And I would assume that a lot of companies are in that space where essentially they're sitting there. They know they want to grow and they know they need to go and do something, whether it's purchase a new machine or whether it's hire a new marketing guy or a sales guy, but they're never quite sure of that return. And that might make them hesitant.
But whoever knows, when do you ever know what the future holds?
Yeah.
Because if you knew for sure what the future would hold, they'd all be billionaires. Because if we don't ever invest or bet on things that are sure return, nothing is a surefire thing. I don't know, a very brief aside, it was a Cheltenham Festival this week, Did you read about the guy that put the £5 bet on?
No.
And four out of the five legs had come up. So he had one horse still to run, and if it won, he turned £5 into £500,000.
Wow.
And it was a red hot favourite. And I saw him in interviews, and the gist of it was, the night before the race, he didn't sleep a wink, and the bookies that he betted with had given him a checkout option. Give up now and we'll guarantee you 280,000. Or put it all on that horse tomorrow and it's £500,000 or above. But it's a red hot favourite. It can't lose. The guy took 280,000. The horse fell at the first hurdle.
Good man. And that's there the thing.
Ain't no such thing. Even red hot certainties don't always happen.
And that's there's a lot of studies that go on about people fearing losing more than they fear gaining.
Yeah.
Sorry, that they enjoy gaining. So people will say, oh no, I lost out on 220.
Interesting. My wife asked me exactly about that. I know what you would do. And I said, it all depends on the position you're in. Sometimes £500,000 doesn't make any difference. So I'd rather have it. I'm only losing a fiver. Or actually, I'm losing 280,000. It all depends what that bloke's position was. I'm going to lose a fiver, or I'm going to lose 280,000.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so we now know what kinds of things people should really be seeking finance for. The question is...
Let me just sum up. Can you define what you think is worth raising money for? What you would focus on raising? Is there a description that you would say?
Well, unfortunately, I mostly agree with you. I'd say that if you're going to raise financing, it should be for growth, really. However, that's not to say that, you know, you don't need it to bridge certain issues that have come up, right? There may be something that has come up that you're...
I think there's actually, it's just occurred to me, maybe there's an interesting thing, which is the difference between funding and financing.
Mm.
And for me, maybe what funding means, when I say raising funding, what I mean is that medium long-term growth money. Things that will allow us to transform and develop the business. Whereas I think when I say financing, what I mean is money that will smooth issues in the short term. Like, for example, make sure we can settle the wages at the end of the month, or help us pay that bill that comes along once in a while that we have to settle, but actually we can then amortize that over the next period of time, next few months.
All right, so you see financing as operational and funding as strategic, essentially.
I get what Anne thought of that until about 5 minutes ago. Yeah, probably that's what I mean.
That's why we talk. I think from my perspective, in many ways, funding and financing are a little bit interchangeable. I think where you look at some of the businesses I've been involved with, and even when we were working at Aztec doing the supply chain financing, pretty much it was used for... Companies that came to us used it for both, really, right? A lot of them would come to us last minute, and because they needed something, they needed to pay a tax bill, they needed to pay employees. But there were a significant number that came to us because they couldn't get traditional bank lending, and it was the only way they could grow. By financing their assets, it was the only way that they could actually get the money in early, so they could hire the extra person who could do that extra work to win a next,
right,
to
pick okay, that next contract. Right?
And so that was the key thing for me. And I think what I would say is that a lot of the times, if you're, I mean, this is going to be a very harsh thing to say, but because we all get into this situation, but if you're financing because of the fact that you don't know your VAT bill's coming, then you haven't really planned your business very well. Yeah. And I know that.
I beg your issue.
I think that's the problem. If you're seeking financing at that level, then there's a more systemic issue within the business that you need to really look at and understand, why did I not know this, or why have I not accounted for it? And it could well be that, you know, you've got 10, 12 months to pay your corporation tax, so you may think,
I'm going to change my point of view on what I just said there. I think what I'm trying to refer to then is financing in the short or funding and financing for the short term versus funding and financing for the medium to long term. Been two very different things.
Definitely.
And one of them is about investment. It's about putting down now to allow one to grow and develop in the future. So I guess that is, if one is going to finance a piece of machinery over 5 years, will it allow us to grow the capabilities in the business? Or if one was going out to raise £1 million of new equity into the business to do growth things, as opposed to, well, do you know what, if I can finance that invoice, that'll bring the money in a little bit earlier than it might otherwise have done. That'll make it easier just to keep this month's wheels turning and not get to a pinch point later on where I might not be able to write the check that I need to write.
I think one of the key things that people make mistakes on, and this is me talking to other CFOs and accountants, is that people don't really, they think too short term and they're not thinking long term when they're seeking financing. So they'll try and finance the next 2-3 months, but not really thinking, actually, do I have to go back to a lender in the next five months' time to get more money? That's the same for funding. So equity finance as well as financing for loans or bank overdrafts or whatever it is. Because, you know, you often see people coming to us seeking funding and they want £150,000. You're like, well, that £150,000 is going to last you 6 months. So what are you going to do then? You're going to go back and find some more money after that? Because there's no point. No one wants to. It's a huge overhead to try and get funding, but B, it shows that you're not really thinking strategically and planning for the future, right? You're not thinking this business is going to last.
Well, lots of businesses, as you well recognize, might go out and say, actually, here's our 5-year plan. To deliver that 5-year plan, we're going to need £1 million. And the funder might say, well, let's start off at 150 to see you through the next 6 months. And if you're doing what you say you're going to do, then the next launch will come through. But that is not funding for the short term. That's having a long-term plan and then having the money dripped in as you demonstrate that it's a good use of somebody else's money.
True. But again, I've seen investors like that, and I would suggest that some other investors that I've known who will say, okay, rather than we'll give you some money up front and maybe there's a drawdown facility that you can get 6 months. But actually, ideally, as a business owner, you want a year's worth of knowledge, right? You want a year's worth of security. 6 months, you can't do much in 6 months. It takes you 3 months to get everything in order and another 3 months to see the effects, right? So in 6 months time, you're only just seeing the impact. A year gives you a much broader time span. But I think that's, again, it all depends on.
Okay. Let's not split hairs between 6 and 12 months. I think we're agreeing on the principle of that you must, if you're taking medium to long-term funding, it has to be based on a medium to long-term plan. If you're seeking gap funding in the short term to see you through a piece of time, it's going to be hard to get that unless you can convince whoever's funding it that you actually have a long-term plan. Because if not, all it is one crisis to the next.
Yeah. And this brings me on to the next point, right? Where what should you have in order before you start the funding piece? And this is one of my big bugbears, because I see this a lot when it comes to startups, it comes to growth businesses, right? It's return on investment. This is something that I think I have not seen since I was dealing with it back in 2014, 2015, right? I mean, when we were doing all this, these things at the Aztec, and the problem was, even at Aztec, we had too much money. So it meant that no one really cared about the return on investment. But
I have certainly seen that firsthand. Too much availability of growth money.
Yeah, but I think the problem with a lot of people who will be listening to this podcast is they don't have enough money, and still they don't do the return on investment, right? No one, I don't have a single startup coming to me asking to build technology that has a return on investment plan. Like, they don't. If you ask them, are you going to see that return on investment? No idea.
How would you be advising them to measure or project their return on investment?
Well, obviously there's a large bits of, let's say, from a technology build, right? There's big bits of the technology build. You need to get there needs to be a certain amount of cost to get the applications up and running and get the right infrastructure in place, et cetera, right? But I'm really talking about some of the smaller features that come along, because oftentimes everyone changes their mind, right? And entrepreneurs, being human beings, they often chase the next great fad. So you'll hear people coming to us, and we, you know, I tend to, I'm the, I'm one of these CTOs that tends to say no a lot, right? For example, there's a good example. When I was a CTO of an e-commerce, very large e-commerce business in Norway, our founder, the guy who ran the business, great, great guy, love him to bits. It was an auction site, and he wanted a bell to be ringing every time someone bid. So you just hear this constant dinging sound, right? And I knew that it's going to take some amount of time and money to test it and build it and do it, right? And my point to him was always, what return are we getting from this? He really just wanted it as a gimmick. And I said, but what is it? Because you take this piece of functionality, it's going to occupy maybe a day or so of a developer's time and a day of half day of testing, whatever. It's not a lot, but it's still something that we could do. Fine. But what's it going to bring as opposed to us doing this other thing, which might take a couple of days, but it'll actually bring some money in, right? And so this is the thing that I always try and speak to the startup founders about, or anyone who's dealing with technology. It's like, why are you spending for this pound that you're spending? Are you going to get 50 pence back, or are you going to get £1 back in a year? Or what are you going to get back for this thing that you're trying to do?
So that's dead easy, providing whatever you're doing has a direct tangible benefit to the business. But that doesn't work if the benefit of what you're doing is intangible.
But what are the real intangible benefits? Because even if it's everything has to come to something, whether it's branding, whether it's investor appeal, whether it's customer appeal, even if it's goodwill or whatever it is, there's still maybe an intangible asset, but it's still an asset, right? There's still something that you can say that there's going to be some value.
So in an early stage of a growth business, how do you measure the tangible benefit of building the brand in the short term?
Because
it's possible.
Well, I think the thing is, it's not necessarily about, well, you know, the benefit of building the brand is essentially you get to differentiate yourself in the sea of.
How do you measure that to establish a return on investment? Or was that £150 spent on that worth it?
But so if
actually,
I talk,
that's about a long term return.
Well, I think if you talk about it from a technology point of view, because from advertising and marketing, obviously I can't. You are the expert there, but I could definitely speak to
you. Come on.
Well, I mean,
you're on the hook now.
Fair enough. So, from a marketing point of view, I always think that if you're going to make a decision within something like branding. So, let's take for example the Atom Ventures rebranding, right? So, we went through Atom Ventures rebranding and Atom CTO. So, what was the benefit there? The question is, what we saw in the market was an issue that people were confused as to what we were doing, right? And when you went to someone and say Atom CTO, they understood that was CTO services. So that's why we undertook that rebranding. And we knew that there was a problem to be solved. And the way we could solve it was being clear in the way that our messaging worked and what we were doing. And that has worked, right? People can obviously see what we're doing. So for me, it was quite simple. Okay. Yes. Is it something that's going to make us get it easier to get to market, which will then should give us a tangible benefit of more, leads coming through the door. And so that was that for me. And
do you measure that now?
Measure the
amount of investment, of money, of funding that you spent on that piece of brand clarification in terms of the amount of money that comes back to the door of the business?
In a sense that yes, because since what you do is you can compare what was going on before and what was going on afterwards. So you can look at it from a pure numbers perspective, but you can also look at it from a pure ease of conversation perspective. So are my conversations shorter? Yes. Are people understanding what we're doing quickly? Yes. As compared to the conversations we were having before. And what does that mean? It means it's saving. It doesn't necessarily mean it brings you additional money, but it saves you time and it saves you.
This becomes a circular debate because that only works if you're able to do that test in an environment where nothing else changes other than one dynamic. And then you can measure against a control sample of what was the difference that one change of factor made. And then you can actually quantify it.
But that's interesting. So then when you were doing advertising marketing, did you make lots of changes all at once when you were working with
it was one of the challenges that we had when it came to absolutely definitive proof of precisely what impact the marketing had, or the advertising had, or the branding had. Because you could not prove, well, you could, but involved a huge amount of work that nobody that I am I ever worked with was willing to do. But proving it beyond all reasonable doubt was effectively impossible. But the good news about that was that business management is not about proving beyond all reasonable doubt. The reason managers are managers, execs are execs, and chief execs are chief execs, is that they are charged with delivering a result. And they don't have to be able to come back in and say, I can definitively prove exactly the thing that I did that made the difference. But normally what they can do on the balance of probabilities, which is not beyond all reasonable doubt, that civil proof versus, can't remember, civil law and criminal law, beyond all reasonable doubt, what they can say on the balance of probabilities, the series of actions we took were responsible for this outcome. And that's how shareholders hold corporations to account by saying, yeah, we believe you actually did what you said you were going to do. And it delivered the return that we hoped for.
But I mean, I guess...
Look, in fairness, I'm taking this onto a whole tangent here that is another podcast.
Yeah.
About how do we measure the return on the effort and the work that a business puts in.
Definitely. But I think just to close off this piece, I think if you... what I'm trying to get at is that when you're looking at financing or trying to invest in anything, right, whether you're either requesting money from someone or putting your own money into something, you should really be asking the question as to what will the benefit be. You don't have to be right, and it doesn't have to be necessarily measured, but it has to be something that you're thinking that you're getting out of it rather than it's a good idea.
Right, we're going to agree on this point then for absolute sure, which is when one goes out to seek investment, let's say you're going for a large amount of investment, millions of pounds of equity investment into your business. Whoever is going to invest will undertake proper due diligence. We will bring in experts to interrogate the assumptions and the forecasts that you are basing your plan on. And then their report will go to the investment committee of your investor who will sit and analyse all the information they have and then make a very considered view as to whether they want to do this investment or not, which is all about the risk and return perception and their willingness. And I think what we're describing here is you need to have, even if it's not going to an external party, you need to have a very, very clear case for exactly why you need this funding and the benefit it will bring to the business that justifies the degree of risk involved. Or else you're not investing in funding, you're just spending money in a gamble.
And I think I just want to layer in one other point here, which is, and I did this on a podcast with a lady called Alicia Butler-Pierre. She used to work at Monsanto and Coca-Cola and Shell. And she works with helping businesses grow in a sustainable manner, right? So helping people put the right business processes in. And one of the points that she was making, which I can wholeheartedly agree with, is that before you're doing any of this, right, before you're going to get any kind of funding, you need to be able to have the data points to measure what it is that the return is going to bring you. So yeah, if you're one of these startup business owners, founders who go, well, my accountant takes care of that, or you know, I've got a bookkeeper who takes care of that. No, it's not good enough. You have to know your numbers. You have to be measuring these things. And if you're not measuring it, don't bother trying to get finance.
Well, that then relates back to the personal finance situation that a man of your means, Barab, I'm sure, is inundated with lending organizations saying, go on, take a loan for this amount of money. You can buy a new car, you can buy a new house or another boat.
Yes, this is not Greece.
And you have to say, just because it's available doesn't mean I should take it. Because actually, is it worth it? Will that actually make what I'm doing better than where I am right now? And that's why we choose different kinds of funding in our personal life for different reasons, which probably brings us on carefully into the kind of core areas of funding that a growing business might be able to access.
Yes, and I think this is in itself probably another podcast as we're running out of time. But I think in the last few minutes, what we can do is just highlight some of the types of funding out there that exist, because obviously everyone is going to think of their bank as a first point of call, and that's borne out by the statistics, right? Everyone seems to go to their banks as the first point of call for overdrafts or loans or credit cards. But then you've also got alternative finance providers. You know, we built one and we built many more, which provide invoice financing, invoice discounting, purchase order financing, other types of trade financing. So I think obviously it really very much depends on what your business is. But I'll say one thing, right? There is a really interesting movement now that in SaaS-based companies. So if you're a SaaS-based company and you've got a solid subscriber base that pay X amount per month and you want to grow, then there's funding now available on your subscriptions. So it's almost like your subscriptions are seen as assets. So you know that you've got stable growth and revenue in that, you're able to get funding there. So I think that's
effectively invoice funding, but it is invoices that haven't yet been raised.
Exactly. So there's a slightly different nuance to it all, but I think that's something very interesting. And there's VCs now out there that will do that. Now, obviously you have to have some traction and show that you've got revenue and a base of money there. But if you are that kind of business, then you don't necessarily have to go to the traditional VCs and give up equity for it.
Well, I think this is a whole other podcast. You know, I think one of the challenges right now is there are so many different sources of funding available. And the real skill is matching the right kind of funding to the right kind of business for the right kind of purpose.
And I think this is where we'll need to get a good virtual CFO or a CFO on board and talk about this. So I guess the last point we should mention is that, you know, once you've got your funding, what happens then, right? What do? Do you just spend the money willy-nilly?
Well, you go out and buy the boat, the fancy office, and the Ferrari.
Well, if you're a Wirecard, that's exactly what you do, right? Or who else has been doing it? Davey. You know, there's just so many people who've been stealing money. Well,
my first, foremost, and absolute point is you have a right good hard look at the plan that you had for raising that money and remember why you raised it. And don't spend it on other things.
Mm.
Spend it on the purpose, because that's why you raised it.
And don't be tempted to, because I've seen it before, right, where companies have raised the money and then they're suddenly tempted to say, well, actually, there's this other thing here that I could do. And
that's my point, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, you've spent a lot of time working out. Well, hopefully, you'll have spent a lot of time working out exactly why you need it, or and the right amount of time, because it might actually be done relatively quickly. It might not be that long. But you know why you raised it. So there's absolutely no point in getting distracted on the way to the shop by the shiny new thing in the window. If what you need is to fix the plumbing, fix the plumbing. Don't buy another gizmo to add into it.
No, 100%. And again, my kind of piece of advice is make sure you go back to the monitoring piece, right? Have the data to hand, see where the money's being put, make sure it's going to the right place, but also make sure that you're seeing the results and monitoring those results. Now, of course, you don't necessarily have to pull the trigger, pull out of the investment, or if you can early, but you should make sure that you're maintaining it and understanding what your returns are and have all those measurements well in place well beforehand. So, yeah.
Excellent.
Well, that's great. So thanks for that, Alan. What are we going to be talking about next week? Business resilience.
It would really have helped if I thought about business resilience, yes. How to make sure that you build in process, tools, and practices within your business to make sure that when inevitable rough patches come, you're ready for them and able to see yourself through.
Excellent. Well, thanks for that, Alan. Have a good evening, day, week.
And the same to you, and see you next time.
Cheers. Many thanks for taking the time to listen to the podcast today. If you like what you hear, please leave a review or subscribe. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, all the main podcasting sites. And if you'd like to learn more from us, you can contact Alan. He's alan@tbgp.co.uk. And you can find me at info@atomcto.com.